now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astral robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And babes.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain! Back to the House of Pain!
Hello everyone and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast. From classics to cults and all the cheese in between, the movies are B, but your entertainment is grade A. And I am your host, Jason Giaconetti, and I'm joined today by my dad, Al Giaconetti.
Hi, Jay, how are you? I guess we're going to be doing a very underrated film today, The Black Scorpion, which is one of my favorites.
Yep, 1957's The Black Scorpion, and we'll get to it right after this.
News of all. At nightfall, monstrous animals crawl out of crater of volcano. Great herds of cattle stampede before this living inferno. Vast area devastated by appalling new horror. A creature named the Black Scorpion by panic-stricken people of San Lorenzo. Entire population prays for deliverance.
For miles around, cowboys came upon one dead steer after another. One of them had heard the tale of the demon bull of the Maricopa. Having lost family or friends, something absolutely unknown, he could be in another world.
Nation's leaders confer as news received a possible threat to capital.
This is a city of 4 million people. If word of these leaks out, the panic of the population could be worse than the scorpions.
The Black Scorpion destroys communications. Hundreds annihilated. Scale never achieved before by any science fiction picture. Thousands in the cast.
The Black Scorpion came out on October 11th, 1957, and was actually released January 15th, 1958 in Japan. It's very rare we find any notes on that stuff. The director was Edward Ludwig. Now, this is the only monster movie that he actually made. He mostly made TV westerns and then like those love story slash war movies, you know, kind of thing back in the day. Produced by Jack Dietz, a name we'd heard before, and Frank Melford. Written by Robert Bleese and David Duncan. Music by Paul Sautel. We've heard that name before here, too. Distributed by Warner Brothers. Even though they didn't create the movie, they distributed it. Means they make all the money. And it runs about 88 minutes. The main stars of the movie, Richard Denning, and you'll know that name, hopefully. well, obviously he made a whole litany of movies. Twice Told Tales in 1963, Target Earth in 1954, Creature with an Atomic Brain in 1955, The Day the World Ended in 1955. But mostly he's known from Creature in the Black Lagoon, 1954. Actually was born in Poughkeepsie, New York, not too far from where we're recording this today. You have Mara Quarterday. She was in The Giant Claw, 1957, and Tarantula, 1955. And then Carlos Rivera, who was a TV actor, he actually was in True Grit, and he actually was in They Saved Hitler's Brain, 1968.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They must have needed a They Saved Hitler's Brain is atrocious, so who knows what he was playing in there. I've seen it, but I seriously don't remember him. Richard Denning, actually, is the guy who... He's the American, obviously, with a mostly Mexican or Spanish-speaking cast. I have a hard time seeing him doing anything else except arguing with them on the boat about having to capture the creature. He's always kind of like that smarmy look to him anyway, but so.
Yeah, well, Richard Denning, though, he was, even though he was the second lead, he actually had a better part than the first lead, because he's the one who actually makes the story move.
In what, in The Creature?
In The Creature.
Yeah, well, because he's the guy who's being a jerk.
Well, yeah, but...
He's not the guy solving problems, he's the guy causing problems, but that's another story. Anyway, you know, and obviously, we're going to talk about this coming up, but The Giant Claw was also 1957, Mara Corday plays the scientist there, or she plays the mathematician there, right? And she's playing the rancher here. But there's a funny story why she's in both movies, and I got that for you in a minute. All right, so let's get started with our story. We're going to do like we did last time, folks, where I was talking about that. We're going to annotate as we go. All right, so the movie opens when an earthquake strikes Mexico, resulting in the overnight birth of a new volcano. And it's funny because that actual volcano footage was the, what is it, the Partuchitin, which erupted in 1943 and was active for about a decade.
Yeah, and it's about 2 minutes of the stock footage of the volcano erupting. And it's seamlessly added. I mean, you know it's stock footage because they just couldn't add a volcano going off at the same time they were filming. But it's effective, and it moves the story along right away.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Hank Scott, and that's actually Richard Denning, and Dr. Arturo Ramos are sent in to investigate. They're geologists. So en route to the village, which is San Lorenzo, they come upon a police car that's been completely smashed in and a house that's been destroyed. And they find one of the dead police officers, and I don't know what's killed him. And it later turns out that he was stung to death by the giant scorpion. Again, very similar to them, Gramps having, you know, could have died any number of ways, right?
Right.
That's when they also find the infant Manuel with the rattle. That's the rattlesnake scene, which is, it's funny because you're watching, this man's dead and you're kind of like, oh, it's a snake? And it's like, he's got his gun pointing, he opened the thing and he's got his gun pointing right at the kid.
Right, and, yeah. And very similar to them, it's 6 minutes into the movie, you hear the sound of the... of the scorpion, which is not the same.
Oh, no, it is. It is.
It's close.
No, they added the roar. That's it.
Okay.
It's the exact same sound. It was actually one of the stock sounds they had. Because Republic Pictures, who was part of making this thing, there's a lot of stock footage that was Republic stock footage and a lot of stock sounds. And one of the stock sounds they had was that sound, the cricket sound, that not crickets, we know it as crickets. It was the tree frogs and stuff they had recorded for them. It was one of the stock sounds they had, and they used it again. But I think what they were trying to do there, it wasn't so much they were trying to ape on the sound from them, but when you heard that sound, you're like, oh, I know that sound. Like, something bad's going to happen. You just knew it was bad. It's like when they start playing dramatic music in a TV show. You knew something bad's going down. All right, so they take the infant Manuel, they take him to San Lorenzo, and obviously the volcano's gone off. Now, they don't have communication right now, so they don't know who's coming. They bring him there, and they wind up meeting Father Delgado, who's the village priest. And since the volcano has erupted, it's about a week or so later, you find out from Father Delgado, there's been disappearances of locals and destructions of their home, and obviously some of their livestock have been killed, and there's strange roaring noises at night, which is what we just heard. The villagers believe it's to be a demon bull, and they've asked Father Delgado for his divine assistance, and he tells them, there is no demon bull, I can't do anything about it, and they just feel he just won't do it. Hank and Arturo then begin their study to start surveying. They're going to survey the land as members of the Mexican army, led by Major Caso, arrive in San Lorenzo as part of the disaster release effort. Now, what happened was, why they're coming in, well, they know that there's a disaster. When they find the police car, it still works. They call in. Now, when they call in, just to backtrack, when they call in on the police radio, this is supposed to be in Mexico. The police officer is Mexican. Everyone speaks Spanish. The guy on the radio is stock radio voice guy. What is this? What's going on? He puts his own radio voice on, right? And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I'm willing to accept there's a giant scorpion. I can accept maybe this is the one guy in all of Mexico who's just doing it. And they meet there. So they go out in the field and they're surveying and stuff. And that's where they first run into Teresa Alvarez, who is the rancher. She falls off her horse, and
yeah. I mean that when they first spot her, it's Richard Denning sees her through
binoculars.
Through binoculars, yeah. riding on top of the volcano.
I mean, on a horse.
On
yeah.
a horse, right? And she's just a foolish girl, but that brings it introduces the love interest that follows later on in the movie.
Well, the horse throws the saddle. She falls right off with the saddle.
With the saddle.
And, which, again, it's...
You don't go riding with your saddle loose.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. This is 1957, so none of these things would fly anywhere in today's movies. Today's movies, it would not be allowed for her to be to fall off the horse. She'd have to have been attacked by something, or something would have to happen. It wouldn't be allowed to happen that way. But... that's a whole other story. But that's when they meet her. And then they eventually meet Juanito, who will become more important as we go on.
Yeah, now, Juanito, in this movie, 1957, he's also the little boy from The Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who gets Charles Bronson killed.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
he had a big year.
Yeah. All right. So at night, that's when the giant scorpions are coming out at night. So after they kill the staff of telephone repairmen, which is great because the telephone rings, and Teresa runs, oh, the telephone's fixed. She picks it up, and the guy's like, yeah, it's all fixed. And she hears them getting killed on the phone as he's screaming into the phone. The scorpions turn their attention and start coming to San Lorenzo itself. So while now the scorpions are on their way, Major Costa's troops start shooting at this, no effect whatsoever. They can't penetrate it with the bullets at all. The volcano erupts again, because when things are bad, that's when life kicks you.
Yeah. When the phone rings, it's 32 minutes into the movie, and this is the first sighting of the scorpions. And there's a long shot in stop motion, which is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you first see this, it is one of O'Brien's best efforts. And then there are close-ups of the black scorpion, which mimes the poster art. But it's okay, because all you're seeing is his face and the drool coming out. But and that is, again, is that the poster art. And you see that same shot a number of times through the movie at the various scenes where he's involved. There is also, at the same time, an animated scorpion. Essentially a shadow.
It's a traveling mat shot.
Yeah, it's traveling
what
mat.
What they did was, you can see it on that. It's the matte shot of it walking.
Right.
And he did the traveling matte of it, and they just animated it over the top.
Yeah, that's not very effective.
No.
Because
you can see through it.
After you've seen the stop motion animation of the scorpion, to see that shadow, it's a casualty of the budget.
We can talk about that right now. I think I was going to talk about this after. We'll talk about it right now. I think what the main problem here is, we were just talking about this before we started recording. The Black Scorpion's a movie a lot of people have overlooked. This kind of was lost for a while. In fact, I think the original way we had this was from Sinister Cinema. Back in the day, you used to get a book every month that had everything that was going to be on cable. It was all laid out a month in advance. In the back of the book, you could buy your illegal black boxes, and they had Sinister Cinema, where you could buy movies like It, the Terror from Beyond Space, and movies and like Black Scorpion, which weren't available otherwise. So this is how we got to see these movies. And the problem is that when they show the close-up of the face, it's more humanized face. The eyes are in the wrong spot. It doesn't look like and it's drooling a lot, which people always thought was very silly. And the traveling mat shots that are here, and most at the end, they have a bunch of the exact same traveling mat shots at the end. I think that's why people kind of overlook O'Brien's work. He's not given credit he should be given here for all the hard work he did. And Pete Peterson, right?
Right.
The other guy?
Yes.
That was his cameraman, and eventually became part of another stop motion animation. Not nearly as famous as Harryhausen or O'Brien or Danforth or anyone else. But what we're seeing is a lot of that negative kind of connotation for the movie. People are like, oh, look how bad it looks, because they're willing to point to those scenes. I think that's what they're seeing. people overlook the story, they overlook the good stop motion animation, they overlook all that stuff because they want to look at what's bad, you know. And in a Harryhausen movie, there is no bad animation. There is no, like, and we looked at The Beast in 20,000 Fathoms. There's not a scene where you're like, oh my god, that's horrible. Like, whether you thought the acting was good or not or whatever, there's no scene where there's animation in it. There, it's bad animation. There's no shadow moving. So, where were we? Okay, so the scorpions attack. They kill a bunch of people. So they go back into their lair, or into the cavern. So the next morning, they're out searching for this, and they find the cavern where they are. So they need to lead the Dr. Velasco, who's the guy they're with, that little tiny guy with the suit. Right, he commands. Everyone does what he says, and he just, a little tiny guy, shows up. But he's the one who trying to figure out how they're going to do this, and they figure they have to go down into the cavern to see what's going on. So down in the cavern, so Hank and Arturo go down. The problem is, this is where Juanito becomes kind of a pain in the you know what, because Juanito stows away with them. They tell him don't go anywhere, and he gets into the crane. Bucket. Goes down with them into the cave. Now, in the cave, this is always a point of contention depending on who's what you think. There are two main creatures that are down there besides the scorpions. There's the giant worm with the arms, and there's the trapdoor spider. Both of which, according to originally, they were the original cons. Yes. They're supposed to be the originals. Here's the problem. And this is what Harryhausen said. He goes, well, even if RKO had them in storage, which supposedly they did, 1933 to 1957, he goes, they'd have been in really bad shape. So if they were the originals, and I'm not saying they're not the originals, because they look exactly like the shots the little bit of footage we've got, the silhouette scene from the spider pit scene from King Kong, and it makes sense that O'Brien would reuse this. If they're not the originals, then he redid them. Right, him or Peterson could have redone them. It depends on who. Because at this point, remember, Willis O'Brien was born in 1886. Mm-hmm. He's an old man. He died in 1962. So it's not like he was hanging. Like, that wasn't that. Was it Lost Continent? Which is the one with the Lost World, where they brought him in to do all the effects?
Yes, 1960.
He told him how much it was going to cost, and then he said, "Just put lizards with fins on it," and he gets a credit.
And a man in a suit.
Yeah, But that's what happened. Was they just? I mean, but if he passed away in 1962, I mean. He was very elder at this point. He wasn't able to do a lot of it. And that's why in Mighty Joe Young, and I think people kind of forget this, Mighty Joe Young is a long time ago. It's 48. So that's 15 years after King Kong. And, you know, I mean, 15... That's why Harryhausen was the guy who animated... I mean, Harryhausen did all the Joe stuff, I mean, or 90% of the Joe stuff. And then Peterson did some of the other animation in that. Willis O'Brien gets top credit, and then Harryhausen gets first animator, and Peterson gets second animator, because they're the guys doing the camera work and the other stuff as well. But it just, he wasn't able to physically do it anymore. He wasn't a big guy either. He was a small man.
I mean, after Son of Kong,
yeah,
Willis O'Brien, really, you don't hear about him.
No.
There aren't any major movies that he was involved in. So I don't even know if he did any more stop motion work until there was the hue and cry for Mighty Joe Young.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, when you see the stop motion work in the cavern. Now, to me, this is my favorite part of the movie when they're in there. The scorpion work is great. Again, they show the close up, the same close up of the drooling face. The scorpions look great, and this is where we finally see that there are different sized scorpions. There's actually a really big scorpion who's got to be the alpha of the whole thing, and the small scorpions. And this is the scene where they attack each other, first they attack the worm with the arms, which is clearly inspired by, if not the exact model, inspired by spider spit scene from King Kong. And they kill that thing, and they start cutting it up with their claws. They're like snipping it out like they have a pair of scissors, which is, it's again, it kind of lends its charm there. People be like, well, that's not how that really works. It's like, okay, so you're willing to buy everything else, just not that at this point.
No, that extended stop motion sequence in the cave is just outstanding.
Yeah.
Only when the humans are in the shot can you see a little bit of the matte plates and the seam lines between them. But it is an extended work. It must have taken a year.
Oh, yeah, easily.
To get all that done.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you have the repetitive shots sometimes of the of the scorpions. Because you just couldn't... It would have been a 10-year project to get as much as what they did.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we see here... And I mean, again, this isn't O'Brien was credited as being the special effects, but Peterson's also credited. I got a feeling Peterson did a lot of this work, too. Because... O'Brien, already in 1957, we're getting close to the end of his life. He's a man in his 70s. It's going to be hard for him to be able to, or, you know, to do all this work. I think that's just part of what's, you know, it's part of the process.
And at this time, Harryhausen was really deep into his career. I mean, he was on Seven Voyages Syndrome.
No, 57.
Yeah.
20 Million Miles to Earth comes out in 1957. He's doing 20 Million Miles to Earth while they're doing this project.
Yeah, and then the next one was the Seven Voyages Syndrome.
Yeah, but he was doing 20. Yeah. And think about it, in 20 Million Miles to Earth, the Emir, at no time is it a man in a suit.
No.
It's all him walking, and he purposely made sure the way the legs were bent, and he didn't want anyone to say it could be a man in a suit. And the Emir is on screen from when he's tiny to he's human size to he's grown. He's on screen a lot in that film. So it's a lot of work for Harryhausen as the only guy, because he took his own pictures too. He eventually got a guy to do some of his camera work so he could like move it and take a picture. But that's just part of what it was. In that fight scene down there, though, we get that. Then we get the scorpions fighting. We see the giant scorpion. He flips over the other and reveals the, you know, the underneath of the neck. That stab scene is used later in the movie again. That's, again, that same kill scene. And you don't catch it if you don't look in the background. The background, you can see the cave. When he kills the other scorpions later in the train wreck, you can see the cave. That's the only reason you even catch it.
Yes.
Juanito there tries to hop out of the basket because, hey, Juanito's managed to screw everything else up to this point. Why not now? And he goes and opens the lid to the trapdoor spider. And now the trapdoor spider, now I know it's supposed to be a trap, but that's not what trapdoor spiders look like. It clearly is the invention, because no trapdoor spider has two legs sticking out his hands, right? But it doesn't look as menacing if it's not running after him with his hands. And Juanito managed to not get himself killed. And they managed to escape after the cart, after they get the, what do you call it, the crane thing gets destroyed.
Well, that is a really good scene. The
But you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Beast and John and the 20,000 Fathoms.
Yeah,
in the diving belt.
Diving belt.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's things, I think this is part of the problem. And my brother Luke talks about this all the time. In fact, if you didn't listen to his podcast he did about The Host, where he had the guys from Beware of Monsters on, listen to that one. It's great. He hits on this a lot. Inspiration, you know, the difference between a remake and an homage is, you know, or a ripoff and an homage is how much you spend on it. But these guys, they're all friends. Like Willis O'Brien, you know, Harryhausen, these guys all know each other. So they see something like, oh, that's a good idea, but we'll change it up a little bit. It's not the same as the diving bell, because the creature just comes and eats the diving bell. And to animate the scorpion grabbing that thing, so that means that's got to be suspended on a cable. And the scorpion's got to be placed. And it's every, you know, 24 frames per second, taking all this time. That's a lot of work. To show him ripping the... He didn't just rip it down. He mashes it, he crushes it, and then slams it and throws it over the edge into the volcano.
Right, and so the only thing that's left is the wire.
The wire, yeah.
That's holding the box. So, but when the... This is a really good scene. When the scorpion is yanking on the the cage, up on top is the operator of the crane itself,
mm-hmm.
and he gets a lot of screen time. He doesn't say a word, but if you watch it, the expression on his face as the crane is going left to right, up and down, back and front, it is just priceless. And so when they pull it up and they realize that there's no more cage at the bottom.
It's just Arturo hanging on.
At this point, Arturo grabs onto the thing, and he's holding on for dear life as he goes up. And sure enough, as he's getting closer and closer, his hands are slipping down to where there's maybe 6 inches left on this steel rod.
Ripping his hands
to ribbons. So when they get up, so they just loop on it and send it back down.
And like six guys come over and try to put it on. It's impressive, because that's steel cable.
It's like about 8 inches around.
Yeah, it's enough to hold a cage with two grown men, a child, all their equipment, the canary. Like, it's steel cable, but these guys, I got it, we're good. Just one of the things I wanted to mention here. And we've mentioned his name now a bunch. And part of what O'Brien was doing, and in fact, O'Brien did Mighty Joe Young, and then he later did the Giant Behemoth.
Yeah, which is after this. It's after the dude.
Okay, well, what I'm saying, but the thing was, there wasn't many movies that have his name.
Right.
And Giant Behemoth is one of them, otherwise known as Behemoth the Sea Monster. But again, during that's when Pete Peterson was with him.
Right.
And Pete Peterson did a lot of that animation.
Yeah.
And again, Giant Behemoth, that was actually directed by the guy who directed Beast and Trying the Other Fathoms. He only did a couple movies. That was it, right? And basically, Giant Behemoth is the British version of that movie, kind of thing. Because it really is. He's a dinosaur. He's radioactive.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the Giant Behemoth was, from a British point of view, was the precursor to Gorgo.
Oh, of course. Well, Gorgo was... All right. Let's be honest. I'm sure Luke will have his way in on this thing, but Gorgo is basically like Godzilla.
Right.
I mean, you know,
yes.
Kind of thing. Where, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a little different, but...
And there's no stop-motion animation in that movie.
No. Gorgo is a fun movie, though, and it's actually really well done. For a guy in a suit, it's really well done, because the miniature work and all that stuff was done well. But that's another story for another day. Anyway, so where were we? Juanito gets himself out of the thing. They hook the loop. They go up, right? So they come up. Okay. So they decide, how are they going to do this? They blow up the cave. So that explosion, now, they really blew up something. When you watch the characters, when they blow it up, everyone goes, whoa, like, as if they didn't know how big the explosion was going to be. It kind of reminds me, like, in Jason versus Freddy, when they blow up, they're going to blow up the thing, and all of a sudden, actually, the gas tank caught, and they blew up the entire everything, and like, everyone okay? It was way bigger than we thought, you know? And they cave in, so all those rocks are falling in there, and you're thinking to yourself, going, this can't work.
Right.
This can't work.
But again, this short-sighted answer by covering up the opening to the cave entrance, it led to the first real romantic interlude between Hank and Teresa.
Yeah.
And so, because now, hey, we saved the world.
Yeah, they're in Mexico City.
Eating dinner.
Yeah.
And
well, then no one eats dinner before 11 o'clock. Oh my God, it's only 9. How dare you be so uncouth? It's funny because those scenes... Even as a kid, I was like, all right, let's just get those scenes out of the way to get to the monsters, right? It's not the Terrifying Space. There's no eating in that movie. It came to me to see the scenes where they're at the dinner, right? Where he comes in and he's basically telling her what to do. They're so dated. And of all the things in the movie that date the movie, it's the scenes, it's the way the women are treated, and it's those interactions. I think those scream, hey, welcome to the 50s and 60s, like, you know, kind of thing. Whereas, like, the animation, the stop-motion animation still looks good. I mean, we're watching this on DVD, and it's much cleaner than the old VHS copy, which was kind of grainy and stuff. But it's that stuff still holds, but I think that's always what tells that these movies are, you know, from an older era. Okay, so we go. So they collapse entrance, but Giant Scorpion's, that's about, what, a week later or two, right? Because
yeah.
He's in Mexico City.
Yep.
So they escape, and that's when they attack the train. Now, the train, there's a bunch of stuff with this train. The train scene itself, when you see the train running, the same scene as Luke 3 times, because they got a good shot of the scene running, and it's just background, and it runs. Then, when the train's going down the track, that's when the Black Scorpion, the Scorpions are coming, it's standing on the track. And when you see out the front of the train, the Scorpion's there. Looks just like the scene from King Kong when he bursts through. And what is the guy's reaction? Now, in King Kong, he slams on the brake. Here, I'm plowed into this thing. He just starts tooting the horn, which I think is great. But again, O'Brien knew that scene, that projection there, it's easy to do because you can see it right through. You're seeing it through the finder, not the finder, but like the screen part. And again, as Harryhausen talked about, meant it much more than Willis O'Brien. Because remember, they kind of didn't tell you how they did King Kong. King Kong was kind of kept a secret. Right. Look magazine actually was
later
broke
on,
it. Yeah. But Harryhausen forever didn't know how they did this. It was all, well, so Harryhausen talked about that, you know, with plates and blacking a black plate in front. It's the scene of the Scorpion standing there, the light hits the Scorpion, comes around the corner, hits the Scorpion. It's a great shot of the Scorpion, and it's the stop motion Scorpion, not the giant head Scorpion. So you see the whole actual figure. But instead of like in King Kong where he slams on the brakes and then Kong beats the thing down, he just right into him, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's my favorite scene.
Mm-hmm.
Probably of all the movies that I've seen, it's one of my favorite scenes of all time because it really, really brings out the drama that's happening. And the one thing that you do have with that scene, though, if you have it on DVD, when the train is coming in, you've got a good shot of the side of the train, mm-hmm. hit pause, because the train is Lionel Lines' mm-hmm. Passenger car.
Yep.
And so they actually had a Lionel Lines train that they were filming going around the bend. But it's just an outstanding scene. When that train rounds the bend and you see the Scorpion, he's actually hunched over the tracks. It only takes maybe 5 seconds, mm-hmm. but it's an indelible scene. And it's, as I said, it's probably one of my favorite scenes individually scenes in a lot of movies, with mostly the exception of the Harryhausen ones, because there's no way to discern whether or not the Harryhausen scene is better or worse than anything else. But this one, for what it was worth, was just outstanding.
Yeah, and I think part of that's got one of the most famous scenes it has when it starts ripping apart the train, until you get to the end of the movie when it has the most famous scene from the movie, right, when he's attacking the helicopter. And it's funny, as we're recording this, right with us, we're out here and there's all the models around. Dad actually built one of that, took the right scale Lionel trains, yeah, was that one of the gigantic scorpions, and have little people running away and stuff. And it's just one of those ways of making that. I mean, we've seen dioramas made of, you know, things attacking buildings and whatever, but attacking a train, again, we're thinking Godzilla picks up the train and bites it. Now, Godzilla's a much bigger creature, but that scene was an homage to King Kong,
right,
you know, kind of thing, and he's chewing on the train, but he's much bigger. This scene has that Kong, you know, homage right there, coming around the corner and seeing it, but instead of it being where Kong just smashes the train down, this is now the other scorpions attack and start eating the people.
Right,
they're ripping. They have one where they're ripping the people apart. There's no blood, but it's just a little tiny guy. You see them both grabbing at it and stuff.
Right, this scene is another one. It's very extended,
mm-hmm,
and this must have taken quite a long time to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's at least as long as the cave scene.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So, again, when did he start doing this movie? For it to be released in 1957, he might have started this in 1955.
Well, it's funny. It's actually, they did the stop motion effects. They did it at Topeka Studios. It's in Mexico, right? And O'Brien and Peterson were both working on the set construction, doing that stuff. They ran out of money. So some of the scenes were finished in Peterson's garage to fill in. Okay? But at the same time, they actually got help on building those miniatures from a man named Ralph Hammerhaz. Hammerhaz, right? So he's in the studio filming the Giant Claw. The guy responsible for Giant Claw is doing this. So do you want to guess why the lady was in both of them? They filmed them next to each other.
Right.
And so, hey, an American woman, we don't have to get another one. She filmed both movies back to back. So her scenes as the mathematician there and the rancher here, she did her scenes. But remember, she's not in the movie. She's in parts of the movie, but they didn't need her every day on set. So we went over and filmed those scenes. And the Giant Claw, again, very different kind of film. Imagine the switch. Have the guy who's doing the Giant Claw come over and do Black Scorpion.
Right.
Going to be silly, you know, beyond belief.
I mean,
can you imagine Willis O'Brien's take? And we said this because Harryhausen was originally offered the Giant Claw and he turned it down because he was making 20 million miles to Earth. Could you imagine if Willis O'Brien had been offered the Giant Claw first and said yes? We would have seen. Now, again, I don't know what the creature would have necessarily looked like. I might have been on The Beast or on one of the Harryhausens. We said it could have been the Jupiterian. We could have been that. Obi, Willis O'Brien, had all these ideas. I mean, he's the one who invented Guanji. He had a little short piece he had written out. He said, I want to have cowboys fighting dinosaurs. Well, that turned the Valley of Guanji and that was years ago. I mean, that's what we're talking before Major Young.
Right. It was called Valley of the Mist.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, he had that, but that's before Major Young. So we're talking, well, like 30 years later, they finally lens those things. So, you know, could have been totally different. But the Giant Claw, for what it is, makes perfect sense because they had it. They couldn't get Harryhausen. They couldn't get O'Brien. Peterson's working on this movie. There's no other stop motion guy. It's before Danforth. It's before the other guys. They weren't around yet.
Dave Allen was probably just a teenager.
Yeah. So I'm saying even Danforth Dennis Mirren and all those guys who later came on, they all became inspired by these movies. Yeah. So they're kids.
Yeah. Danforth made the Jack the Giant Killer in '61.
Yeah.
But so he was a young guy then.
He was really young.
But I tell you the truth, I mean, to put even the Black Scorpion and the Giant Claw in the same sentence is sacrilege. If Willis O'Brien could have seen what type of creature was
he probably Willis. Did. He probably saw it and was like, well, I'm going back to my movie now.
I mean, because Willis O'Brien, it was, I'm trying to remember if it was Larranaga, who was, I guess he was the mad painter. But there was Marcel Degado was the one who actually, he built all the models for O'Brien to animate in King Kong and in Son of Kong. And so O'Brien knew, probably knew quite a bit about structure of what a bird would have looked like.
Oh, well, he's the one who told Harryhausen that your stegosaurus legs look like sausages.
Right.
Study anatomy.
Right.
And that's because he truly was about being correct. The thing is this, when you look at what O'Brien did, we're talking black and white, Lost World, right?
Yeah.
That thing. The dinosaurs in that movie are 100% correct based on what they knew at the time. Now, we now know that dinosaurs can't waggle their tails and do whatever, but in every movie he ever did, it's all based on what, at the time, you knew to be 100% correct, and that's what they had on the screen, any of his movies, right? And the flying fortress, or whatever they called the giant claw, right? Whatever they referred to, the flying battleship, right?
Right.
It flies like a battleship would fly because it can't. A turkey is more graceful flying than this bird was. But
the one thing that whenever I see that movie, you showed me a comedian who has the puppets. What's his name?
Jeff Dunham.
Jeff Dunham. He has a puppet called Peanut.
Yeah.
If you look at Peanut's face and the way his hair is, that was the
plumage on top of the head.
That is what the giant claw looks like.
Look for the giant claw in an upcoming episode of Pots, Bugs, and Babes. Okay, so, anyway, where are we? We're going to tell you, they killed all the people on the train, right? So one of the scorpions, the big one, kills all the other scorpions. So now there's only one scorpion left. So they got to figure out how they're going to do this. So they come up with the idea to lure it to the soccer stadium in Mexico City, right? Now, they lure it to there. And how do they do it? Then this is stock footage. The scene there. And I want to know what stock footage that's from. It's a giant truck, and they're just throwing half a cows onto the back of this truck. Wait, who filmed this thing for stock? It must have been probably during some wartime or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you look at this going, who would have film of just men just throwing half carcasses of beef onto a truck and they lure it to the stadium with a truck full of meat? It's following the meat truck, that's what they say. So their great plan is, we're going to shoot it underneath its throat with a giant harpoon. Sound familiar? Didn't shoot it in the eye, but they shot it to shoot a giant harpoon. But instead of exploding the explosion in the thing's eye, which will drive it out and they'll hit it with a nuclear warhead, they decide they're going to shoot it through electricity. 600,000 volts of electricity, right? The worst part... Now, their scenes in this movie, Juanito is annoying because he's just the way he is. But that's his character who wrote it. The worst guy in this movie is the guy who shoots the cannon. He misses the first one. Hits it in the arm, doesn't get it. He goes, I won't miss again. He wheels it in. And I don't know if to blame him, the two guys, or the guy throwing the switch. He electrocutes himself on it. Turn it off, man! What's wrong with you? All I know is every time I'm like, oh, God. Like, what a crappy way to go. You know he'll be honored as a hero because he died in the line of service and whatever. But he electrocuted himself with the giant harpoon. And then, of course, Richard Denning, get out of the way. I got this. I'm a geologist. I can shoot this thing. It's like, trust me, I'm a doctor. He shoots the thing right in the neck. Now, the thing is, they pump that thing for like, there's a lot of scene left. Because when they hit it, it's not like it dies immediately. They keep pumping electricity into that thing. Now, that whole scene where he's fighting those little tanks, those tanks are clear. If they're not motorized, I'd be surprised. They look like they're motorized. And all the animation, of course, was added later. The little pops. But, and that scene does loop in there. You have the loop of him fighting because you have to. But when he, everything he grabs, and I thought this was really important. And this is part of the idea behind what O'Brien was doing. Every single thing it grabs, it stabs. It tries to kill as if it's an animal. At no point is it trying to like cut apart things or do anything crazy. It's grabbing a tank and stabbing with its tail. And when it pulls the one helicopter down and just smashes it and starts stabbing it repeatedly, it is great. It looks good. All those scenes look really good. The classic scene from the movie, which is the model we have sitting here, when he goes up and grabs the helicopter, it's a great scene. You can see, you know, that took forever because the helicopter had to be animated. It's not a real helicopter. It's an animated helicopter. So the blades had to be animated. Like, it had to be hung on a wire. It's just so much work. And if you think about it, they ran out of money. They were in Mexico City shooting this. So, I mean, they were shooting things for cheaper. They had to go back to Encino and shoot this in Peterson's garage for some of these scenes, which I think is why we get more scenes of the face drooling. In some scenes where, like, in the middle of the attack, it'll cut to the face and cut back to the attack, and clearly things have happened. I think that was one of their ways to save money. And clearly the moving mats, those were just, I mean, they're just bad. But I think they were out of money. Like, not like, oh, we were down to our last million. Like, there ain't a million anywhere in the discussion of this movie kind of thing, you know, for budget. So, obviously, they get it in the throat. The choppers and the tanks are, you know, getting destroyed, and it just keeps destroying stuff as they're pumping it, and that, you know, and then finally dead, and they're like, oh, we better study this thing and make the venom. And what happens? Denning and Teresa. We're not done yet. We're gonna go have our, you know, whatever. Which reminds me of the what is that? I mean, he goes, you know, crap. I can't even think of it. Where he's like, there's a candle and it's getting lower, you know, and that's the scene.
Oh,
you know. That's not 20 million miles to Earth.
Oh, he is 20 Million Miles to Earth. He is 20 Million Miles to Earth. Where he says, which is funny, it's the same year, and he's, you know, there's a candle that's burning lower and lower, and it's like how they're not having any time. And what happens at the end of 20 Million Miles to Earth? Do they kill the Emir? All right, the two of them get it in a car, and they drive off. They drive away. Like, you just shot this thing. That, I killed it. I'm done. We're going for dinner, kind of thing. If you can't tell, this is a fun movie. We've referenced some of the things that, you know, obviously the King Kong reference. Warner Brothers actually picked this up for distribution, which means they got to make all the money without fronting any of the money on the other end to produce it. But Warner Brothers knew what they kind of knew what they had here, because let's face it, they already made Them was a huge hit. Them was responsible for a lot of all this stuff happening. We've talked about that before on our Them podcast. And there are a lot of throat callbacks to Them in this movie, I think. And again, it's all about, I mean, again, there's only so many times you can have a giant, you know, creature attacking something or whatever. But nothing is straight ripoff. Nothing's like, oh my God, that's exactly that scene. They're similar, but they're, you know, it has that feel of comfortableness to it. The issue is, I think, with why this movie is not nearly as remembered, it wasn't available ever on VHS, unless you went through like we do, you know, that gray market kind of thing. It came out on DVD, I want to say 2003, 2004, because you have the same one I do. You have the clamshell, that kind of thing. So let's talk about that here. So if you want to buy this movie, go to the Amazon link, like I do, like Dad does every time. It's $14.50 on DVD, and it's the only DVD that's ever been released of it. It's beautiful. It has actually some actual features. The special features are really good.
Really good, yes.
Yeah, Peterson has some of his actual animations on there, which are really good. In fact, the one, the Monster of Las Vegas, where it has that tentacly thing on its face, which is a little weird, but it's a baboon. I'm looking at this going, it reminds me of Mighty Joe Young a lot. It has a lot of Mighty Joe Young, because he kind of was, you know, taking some of that ideas from there. And the cage is from Mighty Joe Young, and the truck cage is from Mighty Joe Young, and the helicopter is from Black Scorpion. He used all those things, right? So that's on there, and then there's a little short piece with Harryhausen talking about stuff, and there's trailers and a little, there's like little featurettes on there. But the problem is, this has never been released again. And that's still available. It's still in print. But it's never been released again. It's only been released on that DVD. I mean, you can rent it for $2 on Amazon. You can buy it for like $7 right on Amazon. But it's never had a Blu-ray. It's never been cleaned up. It's never been any of those things that all these other movies have get that loving touch. Because it's not a Harryhausen movie. I think, and it's sad to say, but I think that's why it hasn't happened. You know, I mean, think about it. The Giant Behemoth never come out that way either.
No, and I mean, we've had a lot of fun discussing this movie. It is, I call it, it's a lost gem. I remember seeing this movie for the first time, probably in 1959, at an old movie theater called the Burke Theater in the Bronx, where I used to live. It was part of, it was like, used to go for 50 cents, you could see four movies, 18 cartoons, and whatever. And it was one of the and I remember watching that, because the first movie I had ever seen was Them, which came out years before. But when I saw this, I said, this is pretty good. It never really made it into what we now know was what was called Million Dollar Movie, which was the Channel 9 in New York, WOR, showing these movies. I mean, they showed all kinds of crazy movies, but this one never made it there. And whether it was lost or there was some rights problems with its showing, who knows? But it is well worth watching, even if you watch it just once. You'll never see this movie on TCM. It just never shows up.
I don't think they have the rights to show. I think that it's a rights. It's got to be a rights issue. I think part of the problem was, since it was made, since it was Dietz and all them doing it, and Warner Brothers was just a distribution company, not the production company. I wonder if they hold the rights to the. I wonder what happened. It could be nothing. Someone might not even think about it.
It could be some dead Indian that owns the rights to it, and nobody can find it.
But I'm saying, but it's one of those things that it just might be sitting. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, because those of you who know me know that I enjoy Mr. Shine's Theory 3000 and Riff Tracks and stuff. And my dad was not super happy when he saw this. But in season 1, episode 13, they did The Black Scorpion. And my dad's first reaction, why are they doing this movie? This is a good movie. Now, mind you, up to this point, we've seen a lot of bad movies. The first 12 of them pretty bad. And during the episode, you can like Mystery Science Theater 3000 and riffing or not like it. That's your call. Luke and I love it. It's part of what we do normally. During the episode, they refer to this as a Ray Harryhausen movie. And Joel says, actually, it's Willis O'Brien. And then gives you a little quick bio, about a 30 to 40 second about Willis O'Brien and what he did. It's paying, you know, not during the, they make fun of Juanito. They make fun of the guy. They make fun of the see-through one and the drooling. A lot of drooling jokes. But it, they never poke fun at actually the stuff, the real effects in the movie. Again, their job is to make it's a comedy. So, but I've always thought that was funny because Joel, instead of it being like they just kind of kept going with the error, he said, actually, that's a common mistake. And he educates you on who Willis O'Brien was. There are a lot of people who have no idea who Willis O'Brien was. They didn't know he had done King Kong or Mighty Joe or any of those things. And that was a quick way of them just paying homage to somebody who helped inspire them. Like I said, my dad's not a huge fan of anything Misty or any riffing at all, but it's fine. It's just be that, that but if I didn't mention, in fact, that's the only way this movie, besides the DVD, the only way you can get this movie is in set number 30 of Mystery Science Theater 3000. That's the only way it's come out, and that's a really clean, nice copy, and that's out by Shout Factory. And it surprises me, unless they're holding off. This is 57. Well, I wonder if, wait, next year could be the year they release it as part of an anniversary thing. Now, because they had to get the rights to Misty had the rights to riff it, because he had to get the rights to put it on TV. Unlike the Godzilla movies, where they lost the rights and couldn't put them out on DVD, they actually have the rights here. So I'm wondering, maybe Shout Factory's in the process of getting this. Maybe by the time you listen to us a year later, you'll hear, like, what do we talk about, Jay? It's on Blu-ray. It's whatever, because I'll have it, you know, kind of thing. But it might be, and then who knows? The one thing I can say is that this is not a movie that you're going to... It's never on anywhere because whatever the reasons might be. You have to go and search it out. There are a lot of movies that get shown a lot that are bad. And this is a movie that gets a bad rap. We were talking before. It's like it's got like a 2.5 out of 5 rating on Amazon. But the ones you actually... But if you actually read any of those, the ones that are like, it could be a 1. It's a bad movie. It's like... Then you read the ones that are 5, and it's like full detail about what's going on, like somebody who actually cares. Again, you guys are, you know, what you're into is what you're into, and clearly Luke and I have been influenced a lot by the movies we watched as kids. Instead of like my dad, the same type of movies he watched when he was a kid. When we look at, you know, giving credit to the, you know, Willis O'Brien, we talked a lot, Willis O'Brien, in fact, we mentioned Richard Denning next to the other people in the movie, but Willis O'Brien and Pete Peterson have been the ones we've talked about more, and Harryhausen was talked about today, and he didn't even hear. He was off making a movie in Venice, right? You know, or Venus, you know, and they're like, no, you mean Venice. No, I mean Venus. So, you know, as Bay Wave movies goes, if you're going to look to find one of these things, I know I told you guys, you know, we were covering this today in the last episode. It's well worth the time. It's well worth going and watching it. If you are going to purchase the DVD, I ask you to please go through the Amazon link on Two True Freaks. Help keep the lights on here. Help keep us putting out stuff for free. Anything else to add about this movie?
No, I think we've said it all today.
Okay. So this is going to drop mid-August, so that means one last time you get to hear about it. Jersey Fest. It's the 26th, 27th, 28th of August. We're going to be there. This is the kind of stuff. These are the kind of movies that everyone... This is funny because we go to those shows. You know, there's not a lot of people my age, right? I mean, we talk about this. Right. There's a lot of people who are old. I mean, I'm in my 30s. Not many people in our 30s. A couple of my friends. There's a couple of guys in their 20s, the sculptors we know and stuff like that. But most of the guys are older. They're monster kids. They're kids who grew up with famous monster film land. They did like you did. They used to go... Maybe they didn't go to the Burke Theater. Maybe they were going to somewhere in Jersey, right, and Pennsylvania, whatever, yeah. Whatever their theater was. And they're, so if you were to go there and say... Black Scorpion, 20 people will be able to tell you all about it, right? And because Harryhausen's got a lot of love there and all these different things that we talk about. And that's one of those things. That and then, of course, the classics. The Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, Beecham Baccoon. Those are the kind of things that really come up when we're there. And I think that's one of the reasons why you've heard me talk about the modeling and Casey Love and, you know, Randy Bowen, which is all really cool. But I think we're with people who are like-minded. Not only do they like to build models, which is, you know, makes us a smaller group as it is, but they're people who enjoy these type of movies, who enjoy this kind of stuff, and not everyone does. Some people would never paint a Black Scorpion. They want to paint naked chicks. Naked chicks everywhere. And that's, I don't paint naked chicks. Well, unless they're a zombie naked chick, and that's about it. You know, kind of thing. So, again, folks, if you want to check this out, you always, you know, it's available. It's just got to go, you know, reach out and look there. If you have anything you want to ask myself or my dad about, I know I did feedback on some of the mail last show. Any mail, just send it over to us. It's all on the outro of the show. It's Bots, Bugs, Babes, you know, podcast@gmail. You know, obviously, anything you want to, you know, feedback, give us, we'll gladly talk about it on the air. Next episode, I think we're going to stay in 1957, just get kind of cozy there, and do 20 million miles to Earth. You know, because let's face it, why bother time traveling all over the place? We can just stay here. We'll go to Venice, Venus, or whatever. You know, we'll go from Mexico City to there. And we'll talk about the Ray Harryhausen classic, 1957, 20 million miles to Earth, which is far more accessible than Black Scorpion if you have to go out and look for it. But like I said, so we'll talk about that next time, folks. Keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?